Light. There it is. Good morning, colleagues. I'd like to call to order today's meeting of the Ways and Means Joint Committee, Subcommittee on Education. And I would like, with that, I would like to open a public hearing on both Senate Bill 5516 and Senate Bill 5517. As you can see, we are here again today for public testimony. We have a couple of sign-up sheets here. I believe we left more sheets over there. Because of the slightly smaller crowd, as you can see on the timer screen, you can have up to 3 minutes. You do not have to go for 3 minutes, but you can. So I'm going to go ahead and call up the first panel. I'm going to call four folks together for this first panel, and then in general we'll try to pull people in threes. I'd like to call Colin Robinson, Aleman Bradley, Betty Reynolds, and Hannah Vandering, please. And you can go in any order you care to. And thank you all for being here.
There is a timer on that screen, if you can see it. It may be hard for way over. And it will, at the end of 3 minutes, you'll hear a ping.
Ping. Ping. And please, before you start your testimony, do identify yourself for the record. Go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the subcommittee. I'm Betty Reynolds. I'm president of Oregon School Boards Association, and I also serve on the Weston Wilsonville School Board. After property tax limitation measures in the 1990s, the legislature showed leadership by stepping in to fill, with the general fund, what would have been catastrophic gaps in education funding. But as you know, the Oregon budget is more dependent on personal income tax than any other state. As a result, since the recession in 2008, we've seen teachers laid off by the thousands. We watched our school year shrink, our class sizes rise, and achievement decline. For example, our graduation rate is one of the lowest in the country. The proposed budget is far below what the Quality Education Commission identifies as needed, and about $380 million short of what school business managers across the state have told us that they need just to maintain the current service levels. In many of the state's 197 school districts, it's a cuts budget. This issue affects more than 578,000 public school students. These kids are our future. Oregon's economy is dependent upon well-educated workforce. Adequate and stable funding is OSBA's top priority this session to assure that these kids get the education they deserve. We're asking that you again show leadership in revenue reform and ideally fully fund the quality education model, or at the least appropriate the $8.4 billion necessary to avoid widespread cuts and in school district education budgets. The OSBA and our partners are eager to work with you and with other decision makers in assuring that young people deserve get the investment they deserve to assure Oregon's future. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Aleema Bradley, and I'm a senior at Jefferson High School Middle College for Advanced Studies in Portland. I'm also a member of the Portland Public Schools Board of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about the state school fund budget. I'm not here to talk to you about the specific line items of this budget. I'm here to talk to you about the unsettling fact that the co-chair's proposal falls short of the necessary funds for even an adequate education for students in Oregon. The cut that will happen as a result will directly impact educational opportunities for students across Oregon, opportunities students cannot get back once they are lost. I know you agree. I also understand what it's like to be in your position receiving testimony on issues of importance during difficult times as a member of the PPS board. It is difficult. However, in this case of education, I simply cannot see a more important investment for our state to make a priority. For so long, the state budget has allowed our schools to get by, but adequacy and not excellence cannot continue to be our bar for achievement. I've been taught when making decisions, you must look at the potential consequences fully. As the student body president, Black Student Union president, and as a student representative to the board, I'm always in need of weighing my decisions. As members of this committee, I would expect you all to do the same. How will this decision impact Oregon students in a year or in 5 years? Will this impact some groups of students more than others? Your decision this legislative session will have lasting impacts for students like those at my school and those that follow behind us. It sends very specific message about what this governing body views as important. You may not feel the repercussions of your decisions now, but students will. I am willing to say you will see the changes and outcomes over the next 2 years when the lost opportunities present themselves. Next year and the following year cannot ever be replaced. I'm only a senior once. Our third graders will be fifth graders the next time this budget comes up for consideration. What happens to those 2 years for those students if you choose to underfund education? At Jefferson, we have made remarkable progress on improving our graduation rates. The graduation rate for the class of 2014 was 66%. Last school year, that number was 84%. With this crisis budget, there is potential for serious setbacks in that progress. With this budget, you are telling students their education isn't important. With this budget, you are telling students you are not preparing students to perform for their full potential. With this budget, we are not giving students the support necessary for success. With this budget, we hear empty talk about standards of excellence, but actions do not back it up, and students are watching. As I stated earlier, I do understand the difficult choices, but in this case, public education is the foundation of our communities. We know there's a direct correlation between education and public health, and we know there's a direct correlation between education and those who end up in our criminal justice system. So to me, this isn't a difficult choice. Please stand with students, put education first in this budget, and do not settle for adequate. Please help us reach for excellence. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Hannah Vandering. I'm an elementary physical education teacher and president of the Oregon Education Association. I want to thank you for your work in creating a path to fund public education here in Oregon. As I was preparing for my remarks, I was reflecting on Alfonso's testimony at the 2015-17 state school fund hearing that I attended. I was remembering how it felt to be an adult and see a fifth grader pour his heart and soul out in front of the committee. He said, "I want to be an engineer. I only have one chance. I promise you I will give more when I become an adult. I will become a person who will change this world for good. I am smart. I work hard. I give back to my town, and I want to make this world a better place. But first, I have to finish school. Can you please help me become what I want to be?" Here we are again. Alfonso is now in middle school, and we have not answered his cry for help. You as a committee have a choice. There are two stark choices for you. One, you can make the choice to have huge cuts in Cumberland our schools. You can ensure that our students will have higher class sizes and that programs will be eliminated that meet the needs of students like Alfonso. Or you can choose to find a way to raise the revenue that we need to properly fund public education and other vital services. It was suggested to me that I ask you to fund at $8.4 billion because that is what will result in no cuts, they say, but it will keep us where we are. But that's not good enough, and I can't do that in good conscience because I know the realities that our students are facing, and it's not acceptable. My entire career, I have watched as Measure 5 has ripped away a quality education from the students we work with every day. We as adults have a responsibility. When I was in school, I had PE, music, art. I had class sizes, but I knew my teachers, and they knew me, for better or worse. But Alfonso has not and will not with this budget. We can do better. I serve on the Quality Education Commission. I have the report. You have the report. We know what we should be doing as adults in this state. The Quality Education Commission report
shares best practice and allows us to understand what it will take to ensure that our students can succeed. We hear about graduation rates repeatedly here in this state. We cannot raise graduation rates if we continue to underfund public education. I'm asking you to do the right thing. I understand the difficulty of finding revenue, but I can assure you that the 44,000 members of the Oregon Education Association are activated and ready to support you in doing the right thing.
Thank you. Sorry, the little beep didn't go off.
I heard no beep.
I know, that's, yeah. It happens sometimes.
I could not see that.
Sorry about that.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, good morning, co-chairs. Thank you for having us out here today. My name is Colin Robinson. I live in Bend. I'm the father of two kids who are in the public school system. I'm also the president of the Oregon PTA, where I speak for every child with one voice. Today, across the country, public education is under siege. In Oregon specifically, we have a very real fight going on. It's a fight for funding. Funding that can make a real difference for the over 500,000 children enrolled in the public K-12 education system. At the proposed budget levels in the Ben Lapine district, we're looking at increased class sizes, a shorter school year, and fewer career technical opportunities for our students. These budget cuts aren't just affecting Ben Lapine. They're affecting schools statewide. It doesn't matter if I'm in Grants Pass or La Grande. Parents know their kids aren't getting the education that they deserve. Our children deserve to be in a classroom where they get the individual attention they need. They deserve a school year that matches those across the country. And they deserve the career technical opportunities that will help them reach their fullest potential. Our children deserve a fully funded education. But for as long as my kids have been in school, there have been consistent cuts. For more than two decades, there have been consistent cuts to Oregon education. As a parent, I invest my time and money into my kids because I know it will pay dividends in the future. It's time Oregon make a real investment in all our children because our children are our future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony.
Next, I would like to call to the witness stand, please, Mary Alice Russell, Krista Parent, I believe, and Matt Utterback.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Krista Parent. I'm the superintendent in South Lane School District, which is in Cottage Grove. Thanks for taking the time to hear from the three of us today. I've been in South Lane School District for the past 32 years, and if you're wondering, I started when I was about 10. I've been the superintendent for the past 16 years, and I'm currently preparing my 17th school district budget. We're here today to talk about the importance of $8.4 billion for the 17-19 state school fund allocation. We all understand that's a heavy lift, but we want to share with you the consequences of not reaching that target. South Lane School District is the fourth largest school district of the 16 school districts in Lane County. 70% of our students on any given year receive free and reduced meals. We also have a special education population of about 17%. As you know, budget cuts have an even larger detrimental effect on students in poverty. Middle and upper income families can oftentimes pick up the slack when school days are cut and programs are eliminated. Not true for most of the families in South Lane School District. We're further widening the equity gap for kids across this state. South Lane School District, as well as many other districts in Oregon, has still not recovered from the massive cuts we made during the recession. In my district, we have cut 41 days over the past 9 years. During that period of time, we've only had 2 years where we've offered kids a full instructional calendar. Kids that started in 2008-09, they're eighth graders this year, they've only had 2 years in their entire K-12 experience where they've had a full calendar. In a district our size, it's nearly impossible to balance a budget with millions needed in reductions without cutting school days. There really isn't much else to cut. The impact of the co-chair's budget on South Lane School District would mean about a $1.8 million reduction in our general fund budget, which is about 6.5% of our budget. The deficit would likely result in about 10 more days of cuts and other staff and program reductions. So these kids will now be ninth graders and missed an entire term of school in their K-12 experience. In Lane County, 9 out of 10 Oregon Rising respondents directly equate our state's success to their child's success and our community's success, and base that on the quality of education our children receive. We really need your leadership and decisive actions to provide the funding our students need. We urge you and all elected leaders to be bold and courageous and to increase funding for Oregon's K-12 schools to an adequate level. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Monroe and Smith-Warner and members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee on Education. I'm Matt Utterback, superintendent of the 17,000-student North Clackamas School District. I'm in my 28th year of serving students in North Clackamas, the last 5 as superintendent. And 2 weeks ago, I was given the honor of serving as the 2017 National Superintendent of the Year. I'm testifying today to share concerns I have with the level of public funding being discussed in both the governor's and the co-chair's budgets. Either budget funding level would have a devastating impact on our ability to meet our state and district's educational goals. As an educational funding level between the governor's $8.02 billion budget and the co-chair's $7.8 billion would require North Clackamas schools to make between $13 and $17 million in reductions to avoid deficit spending. These reductions would impact all students, especially our most vulnerable student learners, by increasing class sizes, shortening the school year, or eliminating intervention programs, reducing educational options that support the education of the whole child. Consequences of these funding levels could include, in our district, the cutting of up to 130 to 170 teaching positions. That would raise our secondary class sizes to over 38 on average. It could mean that we cut between 25 and 32 instructional days, which would certainly reduce employee salaries and valuable student instruction time. Or those funding levels could be a combination of staff cuts, school days, and reductions to critical intervention programs, elective programs, professional development opportunities, as well as not purchasing science materials that are over 17 years old. Any funding level between $8.4 billion will result in cuts to services and programs in our school district. At a time in which Oregon's economy is strong and growing and support for public education is as strong as ever, we must do better. As our elected representatives, I'm looking to you to lead us out of this funding crisis. And I stand ready to join you in support of any budget plan you can devise to save these educational cuts from our school system. I believe that there is no greater service a state can provide than an appropriately funded public education system. I truly believe that our work is about saving student lives. When we fund education appropriately, public schools give our students the knowledge, the skills, and the abilities to assert themselves as a member of our society, to claim their humanity, and I don't believe there's anything more important than we can do for the maintaining of our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi there, and thanks for having us. Mary Alice Russell, Superintendent, McMinnville Schools. You know, after the last Great Recession, 2008-2009, we've referenced it, and you've heard us all talk about cuts. And in McMinnville, it was really important for us to know who are those children that were going to be impacted by those cuts where we had to reduce 40 teachers. I sent a crew to one of our schools, our highest poverty elementary school, which was Buell Elementary School at the time. 85% of the students in attending that school are in poverty. The team I sent to take a photograph, they were instructed, take a picture of kindergartners and so that we can remember who it is we're serving in times of difficult revenue and resources to educate our children. Luck would have it that instead of kinders, they took a picture of first graders. So this cover that's been guiding our work since that reduction has been first graders. And again, luck as it would be, their graduation class is the class of 2019. So as we visioned into what our system would look like for 2020, we kept in mind always this class of 2019. These are kids I met with again in 2011. These are kids I checked in and on middle school. And these are kids who I've checked in now in their sophomore year as high school. There's a lot of students on this list. 10 of them are here with me today. 10 of these students who, when I first met with them and asked them what they wanted to be when they grew up, one said, pizza man delivery because that's deliverer because that's what my dad does. And today, these students want to be doctors, architects, welders, journalists, programmers, game designers, artists, actors, and dental hygienists. So as I said, they're here with me today. Would the 10 of you stand up? So I have 10 of the kids in this photo. Several are not represented today. And I'm just wondering, would you show me hands if your parents ever got a college degree? How many of you have parents who have a college degree? Great. And how about if you end up going to college, like I hope you will, how many of you will be the first person in your family to have a college degree? And then just out of curiosity, how many of you know that I want all of you to go to school after you graduate from high school? Thank you. Why don't you have a seat for a moment? This population, their experience included, 40 teacher layoff, significant reductions in their elementary programs. They then moved to a substantially reduced middle school program, and now they're facing the possibility of greatly reduced programs again during their high school experience. I think this is unacceptable. I think this cannot happen, not to them, not again. In 2002, I joined the McMinnville School District, where I've been the superintendent for the last 15 years. When I came to the district, my first task was to cut $2 million in programs. This was set up by the previous administration, and I had the joy of implementing that plan. The middle schools I inherited in that system had earlier cut staff and eliminated their block scheduling class. And for young adolescents having flexible blocks of time, that's not me because I just started, is very important. In our elementary schools, we once had math literacy specialists to provide personalized targeted interventions. We had extended day year programs for students needing additional instruction. Many of those highly effective programs went away due to insufficient state K-12 funding. We offered Kindergarten Plus during good financial years, adding an extra hour of instruction to the kindergarten day, but we had to eliminate it when funding declined. In some schools, we offered full-day kindergarten, but that also had to be cut on this roller coaster ride of school funding. Though the state has now...
Can you wrap that up, please? That was your 3 minutes, actually.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it can't be.
I know, it never feels that way.
Well, then let me close with, with just this, then. At a minimum, the state school fund must be allocated at the $8.4 billion level. I've been a school administrator for 35 years. For 25 of those years, I've had to make cuts. The students I met as first graders sitting here with me today have been attending schools during budget cut after budget cut after budget cut due to inadequate K-12 funding. They need to be assured that the programs of study they are planning for today are here tomorrow and are here through their graduation in June 2019. And by the way, for those of you who really want to know the rest of what I had to say, it is uploaded in your system, as well as a picture of these fantastic kids. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, three. And thank you, Jen, for being here. Thank you. And if any of you would like to sign up to testify as well, we'd love to hear from you.
She can give her your testimony and read it for her. No.
And I would like to next call up Bill Cluding, Andy Gardner, and Chris Vogel. You can Rochambeau to decide who wants to go first.
Okay, I'll go first.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Chris Vogel. I'm with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And I'm here today to talk with you about Measure 98. You'll find my full testimony already loaded. The League of Women Voters always has positions before we can provide testimony, and we have many positions that support career and technical education. We have many positions that support programs after school, after graduation. But nonetheless, when we were in this last election process, the League remained neutral on Measure 98. Our major issue, our overriding concern, was an ongoing burden on the legislative budget process, something exacerbated this session by the $1.8 billion deficit. We thought that Measure 98 was a classic example of a League of Women Voters slogan in a brochure that we have called Think Before You Ink. When considering initiatives, the brochure asks, when funding is proposed, is this an unfunded mandate? Would it force our legislature to pull funds from other essential programs? And how might it limit government budget flexibility? League of Women Voters believes initiatives should create their own funding sources and not earmark, restricted, or obligate a specific percentage of the general fund. So in the governor's recommended budget, she has allocated $400 per student for Measure 98, as opposed to the approximately $800 that was allocated in the measure. The co-chair's framework has even more devastating cuts for education. And we want to encourage you that fully funding Measure 98, while perhaps a good idea to consider in better times, must be rejected this session unless extremely significant additional stable revenue and fair tax sources are implemented. And unfortunately, Measure 98 only allows funding of new CTE, and it cannot be used to backfill defunded CTE programs, even those that have a very strong record of success. As you're looking at major budget cuts in many areas of education, this is not the year to fully fund Measure 98. The League of Women Voters, as you know, is in this building day in and day out. We look not only at education, but natural resources, social policy issues, governance issues, and follow the Ways and Means and Revenue Committees. We know that education is not the only area that's hurting. Thank you for taking care of our kids.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Bill Clothing Partners Industrial Council. Co-chairs, Warner, Monroe Committee. Let me first say that additional funding is needed. There's no doubt about that. What we got to be careful of is make sure this funding winds up directly in the classroom for these students. It's too easy to shift this money around. We got to keep it in the classroom. Everybody in this room knows Oregon is not where it should be. Through the years, a lot of people have tried. A lot of ideas have been tried for little gain. Maybe we need to look north to Washington. I've looked at that program a little bit. They're twice as big as us, twice as many students, twice as many school districts. Area-wise, it's about the same. They have rural Washington and urban. They have 9 education service districts. We got double that. Some folks in the building think Measure 98, which we all know got passed. The people of Oregon know something is needed. It passed 65%. Some people want to change the intent of Measure 98. I say no. Some folks say we can't afford it. I'll go on record saying Oregon cannot afford not to fund it. We need to get these kids educated and good jobs. Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Andy Gardner. I'm the superintendent of the North Sandingham School District in Staten, Oregon, just east of here. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what my colleagues spoke about earlier, the $8.4 billion, as well as specifically address the quality for effective teachers. And I know some of you are familiar with that. I work with the Chalkboard Foundation. We participate in several of those programs. I want to share with you a little bit about how that has changed our district in the last few years. A comment about the budget. We have generally been fiscally conservative in the district. I tend to be a fiscally conservative person. And we have at times had some difficulty as we work to make sure that we are sustainable. We try to look at it in the long term, but we are like everyone else. When we look at our costs as we go into next year, we find that 8.02, the governor's budget, just about makes us par with our PERS increases. We do not really become healthy until we're about 8.4. Anything short of that generally leaves us short, and we're going to be cutting some things. But even that effort to be sustainable is really this new bill from PERS overwrites many of those efforts over 7 years. I've been the superintendent there for 7 years, and we are beginning to look at cutting. And so I would just say that we believe we have reasonably worked with our people, and this overwrites all of that work. And it's beyond our control, and I know you have a huge challenge there, but we have not been indiscriminate with our funds. We have worked really hard to be sustainable, and it is just a big hit. Talk to you a little bit about our involvement. 4 years ago, we began to work with the Chalkboard Project on the collaboration grants, class grants, and work with our staff to really transform the nature of the district. And of course, you are somewhat familiar with those grants, but we engaged with our teachers in a full year-long planning process, and then have worked with them the last 3 years in that work, and it has significantly improved the culture of our district with the same people. The topics change from contract talk, how many meetings you can make us attend in a week, to now the discussions are, how many times can I be involved in watching other classrooms? How many times will you guys be by to see me? We are working on things together. It is an extremely enjoyable environment now to work in. I've also experienced through Krista Parent's leadership, who you listened to this morning, she was a distinguished leaders council member and really the leader of creating the cell work. 2 years ago, we joined the Leading for Learning network, also through the Chalkboard, and we began to shift in a really great partnership way, working with other districts, where we moved our entire meeting structure into classrooms, into observations, and we were able to do that with other districts as they did it too. So it was a very supportive, learning-oriented environment, and we enjoyed that a great deal. And to this day, we've seen significant impacts in the TEL survey on our teacher satisfaction in the district. We have seen significant impacts on our principals' enjoyment of their work. I think we have about 145 teachers in our district. As of today, I think I've seen 109 of those different teachers teach, and my goal is to see them all.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Next, I'd like to call up Kevin Frazier, Maria Sleeman, and Dr. Ellen Stevenson.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Frazier. I'm here representing Children First for Oregon and United for Kids. Children First for Oregon, for the past 25 years, has served as Oregon's premier source of data for the well-being of our kids. And for the past 3 years, we've produced a children's agenda, that has our legislative priorities that aim to make Oregon the best place to be a kid. Today, I'm joined with our newest Children's Agenda partner, Reach Out and Read Oregon. And to my right, I have Program Director Maria Sleeman and Dr. Ellen Stevenson from OHSU. She's a pediatrician. We're here to tell you about the amazing benefits provided by making pediatricians a one-stop shop for making education happen as early as possible on literacy. And if you have some free time, and I know that's a little short right now, we'd love to have you at the April 13th informational hearing at Representative Lively's House Committee on Early Childhood and Family Supports, where we'll be able to delve in to greater detail on the benefits of Reach Out and Read Oregon. If you can't make it, and I understand if that happens, we do have a wonderful YouTube video on the benefits of this program that we've sent to committee staff. And you can also hear from former representative Betty Comp, who wrote a letter on behalf of the program, as well as some of the donors to Reach Out and Read. And that's also available to all of you on the electronic database. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Maria.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Maria Sleeman. I'm the program director for Reach Out and Read Oregon. Reach Out and Read Oregon is an evidence-based program promoting early literacy through primary care beginning in infancy. We work with primary care providers who volunteer their time to prescribe books during well-child visits and educate the families on the importance of establishing early literacy skills. During well-child visits from 6 months through 5 years of age, primary care providers provide guidance to parents on the importance of reading aloud every day. They model reading. They also hand out a new book at each well-child visit. So by the time a child is 5 years of age, they have a small library made possible by Reach Out and Read. We currently serve approximately 75,000 children in Oregon and 112,000 parents or caregivers. This is through our 112 program sites, which includes 150,000 well-child visits every year. We also work with about 1,200 volunteer medical providers and staff. With $100,000 in funding this biennium, we would be able to continue to serve those 75,000 children in Oregon, as well as include our goal to increase our reach by 5%. This is, we believe, one of the pieces to the puzzle, getting children ready for kindergarten, and not forgetting that early is so important, and it happens even before kids get to school. So with that, I would like to let Ellen Stevenson, our medical director, talk a little more about the outcomes and evidence behind our program, and I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. As they said, for the record, my name is Dr. Ellen Stevenson. I'm a pediatrician at OHSU. I'm here as a physician because we have a tremendous responsibility to provide families with the tools that they need years before they enter the classroom to be successful in kindergarten, which, as we know, paves the way to third grade reading proficiency and ultimately successful high school graduation. Health and education are very much intertwined. And early brain development is what really provides that foundation for learning. And we feel that waiting for preschool or kindergarten is just too late to start this conversation. By 1 year of age, the brain's processing speed already significantly differs based on parent-child language interaction. There are studies that show that there's word gap that's evident by 2 years of age. By 3 years of age, there's a 30 million difference in the number of words a child from a higher and lower socioeconomic family will have heard. Reading aloud, we know from many studies, is the single best activity we can do to promote early literacy and language development. And despite this, despite all the benefits we know of reading aloud on both language development and socio-emotional development, only half of parents read to their young children daily, and fewer than 10% start in infancy. I would like to very briefly share the story of a child we saw in clinic. I'll call her Zia. At her 3-year visit, she was very excited when the doctor opened the door to the room and she'd brought a backpack with her. And it was a backpack filled with this library of books. And she took them all out and showed the pediatrician so proudly the books that she had. And we all thought this was incredibly sweet. And then we stopped to realize that the only way she knew where those books were to bring in the backpack that day were it's because they were the only books she had in her house. In low-income families, we know that only 1 in 300 children have the books they need in their home. And we know that books, in addition to reading aloud, correlates very significantly with educational achievement. We can write prescriptions for families to read with their child from the very beginning, from infancy, and give them their first dose, that first book, right at their very first visits. Benefiting families like Zia's. And it's not just the books we can't send in the mail. It's the guidance we give. It's the modeling. It's that trusted bond between the health provider, care provider, and the family. They're looking to us for guidance. Everyone wants their child to do well. Research findings from 15 published studies clearly demonstrate this model works. And it's particularly effective in low-income and bilingual households. In Spanish-speaking homes, families are 10 times more likely to read with their child. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. In conclusion, we hope that you can support Reach Out and Read, spark a lifelong love of learning, foster social emotional growth, increase school readiness, close the achievement gap, and open the doors of opportunity to all children in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, I'd like to call up Lisa McLonicky and Joe Scott, please.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Monroe and Chair Smith Warner and members of the committee. My name is Lisa McConaughey. I am here today representing regional programs for low-incidence disabilities. Last week, Dr. Sarah Drinkwater presented about regional programs in the Department of Education budget. We are respectfully requesting funding that maintains current level of services and to include pediatric audiology services for children in Oregon who are deaf and hard of hearing. Excuse me. The current budget allocation does not include the services for audiology. Regional programs provide education for children who are blind and visually impaired, deaf and hard of hearing, those who experience autism, those who experience traumatic brain injury, severe orthopedic impairments, and those who are deafblind. The services are critical and not funded out of the state school fund. Regional programs serve over 10,000 children in Oregon. And for the record, the number of children that was represented in the Department of Education slide was 2,000 short. So they reported around 8,000 children. The actual number is over 10,000. Regional programs provide education services for children from birth to age 21. We work in collaboration and on behalf of our early childhood special education providers and our school districts. We work to provide highly specialized services from teachers of the visually impaired, teachers of the deaf and hard of hearing, autism specialists, augmentative communication specialists. Regional programs provide highly specialized equipment, consultation, and professional development to our school systems. You will be receiving letters from our school districts and families in support of regional programs. We respectfully request to maintain the current level of services, including pediatric audiology. Thank you for your time and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Chela Joe Nishi Shua Hawanti Se'e. For those of you who are in Eugene and everyone here, I'd like to welcome you to our ancestral homelands. As a member of the Confederated Tribes, I need to say that Confederated Tribes of Siletz, I have to say I'm not speaking on behalf of that tribe. I'm really speaking on behalf of myself as an educator. And as someone who worked on Senate Bill 13, and I'm here to ask you to support that. I'm a veteran teacher of 20 years, 10 years. The last 10 years of my teaching experience was in a tribal school in Siletz, and my job was eliminated due to differing financial priorities in the school. basically a lack of funding. I'm the first Siletz tribal member to be recognized as a language and culture bearer. And I'm here to ask your support of Senate Bill 13, which is called the Native American Experience in Oregon. It's a K-12 curriculum that covers our history, our culture, our treaty rights, sovereignty, government, socioeconomic status, and current events. Again, the Native American Experience in Oregon. It's standards aligned. It accommodates the Common Core. It's not new so much as it's better. There is a curriculum that exists for fourth grade and for high school, and I remember them. What I remember is learning about the Trail of Tears. I remember learning about Geronimo. I remember those things, but I never knew. I knew I was a Siletz tribal member, but I never knew that my ancestors were hunted for fun and profit in Southern Oregon, and I mean that. Vigilante groups would ride around in Southern Oregon. The gold miners would get together and shoot my ancestors and cut off their ears and collect a bounty from the state of California. They would cut off their the babies' heads and trade them for money. These are truths that children need to know. And it's not just negative, of course. We suffered termination in the 50s and then were restored. And good things are happening now, too. So there's you know, it's good, it's bad. It covers it all. Mostly treaty rights and sovereignty, I believe, are things that children need to understand as they grow up and enter, you know, their lives as adults. That's really very much all I have to say. I came here from far, far away, from Indian country, and was poorly prepared, and I apologize. But again, I'm asking for your support of Senate Bill 13, which is called the Native American Experience in Oregon.
Thank you both for your testimony. Unless there's anybody else on the sheet, that is everyone who has signed up. If there is anyone here who would also like to testify, we'd like to give you that opportunity now. As well, if there's anybody who has additional things they weren't able to get to, within a limit, I was going to say we'll give you 3 more minutes if you would like.
Sign up again?
Yeah. No, you can just come forward.
If possible, Mr. Yeah. Scott, we need your name on the record, unfortunately.
Yeah.
If you could
come forward and just say your name on the record.
Can we make it all legal?
Yeah. Yes.
Joseph Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I missed that. Okay. Please come forward.
Well, thank you again, Mary Alice Russell, Superintendent McMinnville. You know, one of the things I didn't mention is for the group of students that we've photographed in their first grade year, presently 83% of them are on track for graduation, 17% are not. So we still have a lot of work to do with that 17% in the next 2 years. Another reason why we think adequate resources are important. You know, under the $7.8 billion appropriation that we recently received a run on based on the co-chair's budget, our students that were here today, those too soon to be juniors and seniors, their teachers will have an average of 192 student caseload. And you can see how difficult it will be, challenging for teachers to get to that 17% of just this class who is not yet on track to graduate. So I think a couple of things that I would just want to add to the testimony that I gave earlier is that in 1989, I was with the Carnegie
Council. I'm sorry, would you say your name again?
Mary Alice Russell McMinnville. In 1989, I was part of a great project as a building principal where we were able to design a middle school and staff it according to all the best practices that were identified through this, at the time, groundbreaking report, Turning Points, about what's good for young adolescents. And we had just this fantastic program going on for kids, and soon Measure 5 came along. And when Measure 5 came along and provided some positive things for some districts, other districts had to make cuts. So that school, in the sight of a year's time, lost 8 staff members that I had to reduce back then when I was a principal, when we actually had a program that met all the research studies, and teachers described the school as Camelot. That school, I look back on, is in Oregon, and it's never returned to its staffed model that we had when we opened the school. It completely changed into a more traditional junior high program
because of funding and lack of resources. And when I mentioned earlier that I've been cutting programs for 25 years in one district or another, with the roller coaster ride that we've been experiencing with school funding, that has happened. You know, when you look back on a career that you spent educating children, you know why you went to that job. You went because you wanted to make a difference for the future. About the last thing you want to do is talk to people about how to reduce programs. You want to talk to people about how to make programs better. You know, I can't tell you that we have any greater responsibility during this period of time than to ensure that a minimum of funding is provided for our schools, that current program levels, current service levels can continue into next year. We're talking about 8-4, not because it meets the quality education model. I'm also a commissioner on the Quality Ed Commission. I know what that research says. I know what it takes to implement. I also know why some schools fail and some schools succeed. And it's because they don't have enough resources to implement sufficient amount of those best practices in order to change the dial for the geographical situation that they live in, for the resource situation that they live in with their kids. But I'm here to tell you, every school child in Oregon can be successful. And I'm here to tell you that the education teams can do outstanding jobs for their children, and we just need to adequately resource them. So we're asking for 8-4 at a minimum, because in my district, for example, I can take my reserves, add it to the 8-4, and not have to cut people and programs. It's not sufficient to get me to build programs, but at least I can continue forward into next year. And that's what many districts are asking, not because it's where we want to be, but because we know that the state is also wrestling with a larger shortfall.
Thank you.
And thank you again.
Thank you.
For your time.
Okay. I'd like to do another call for anybody else who is here and would like to testify. Okay. Come forward and please just start with your name for the record.
Hello.
We'll start here.
Co-Chair Smith Warner and Monroe, members of the committee. My name is George Winterscheid. I am the Executive Director of Special Student Services with Northwest Regional ESD, and I would like to provide additional input a little bit. I didn't plan to speak, but to support regional programs across the state. It is a grant in aid that is part of 5516, and what you ought to know, and many of you do know, I'm sure, is that we're talking about low-incident disabilities, students with the most profound disability impacts, and it's critical that we continue to be able to provide them with support. And one thing that I think you should know is that there's a tremendous amount of support for EIECSE, which is early intervention, early childhood special education, and as there should be. And it's just, I would not want you to forget that the regional programs support birth to 21, so those students also are within the EIECSE as well as school age. And it's important, the funding is not kept up, and our basically it comes down to I don't have enough funds to provide enough staffing to adequately support the needs of the students that need it the most. And so when you're considering all of the early intervention, early the early learning hubs, all the support, which is really great for young children, that the regional programs are sort of the backbone of those that are most highly impacted. So I'd want you to remember that. And I believe that you will receive, if you haven't, there's a talking point that we've put together, and it kind of shows the level of funding. We're just asking that the funding at minimal be maintained. And thank you for your time. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. And did you submit that for the record, I would assume?
Sure.
Great. If you can just go ahead and give it to Julie. Okay, I'll make a final call for any other public testimony. Seeing none, thank you all for being here. Oh, I'm sorry. I have a question from one of my colleagues, Senator Roblin.
Not a question. I just want to make a statement.
Oh, please do.
I want to say thank you to Krista Parent for hiring the old students from Marshfield High School. But the real point of talking to her is that I have had the distinct honor and opportunity to work with Krista over the years. And I think that she signifies a couple of things that, for a lot of us, is really important. And Krista stayed in the same school district for a long time, and I know other superintendents move and go, but she made a commitment, unlike a lot of people do, that it isn't about money. Most of the superintendents do that. They don't get paid as much as you'd like. But she stayed there, and she made a difference. From the time of Simon Cam, which we don't talk about anymore, she got
harangued by people about it at different times, because Hardy's Grove went further than anybody else did at the time. And so if you look at kinds of things that have happened and all of the trends in education over these last 30 years, Krista's been right in the middle of it. And I know that one other of the testifiers have pointed her out again, and she is really iconic from an administrative perspective in rural areas for being here. And the fact that she chose to be here and continues to do this, I just wanted to make sure that somebody said, we thank you very much, Krista.
Thank you, Senator Oberlin, and thank you, Krista. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. I'm a lifelong educator. I started teaching advanced history and government at the high school level in 1965, and I've been involved in education really at every level since then. I want you to understand that when they made me one of the co-chairs of this committee, which is a very important job, they didn't give me a printing press. This is not a revenue committee. We do not have the authority to create additional revenue. We are simply asked to look at the amount of budget that the leaders give us, and sometimes we can shift stuff around a little bit, but in terms of creating additional revenue, that's not our job, and that's the job that needs to be done. I remember well when Measure 5 passed in 1990 and the impact it had on education and the impact it's had ever since. The other property tax limitation measures, like 47 and 50, also had a dramatic impact. This state, the state of Oregon, you know, has no sales tax. Not saying it should have, but it does greatly restrict the amount of money that the overall economy generates for education. And so when you're looking at the overall budget that this state has to face, there's only about three things that we spend money on. Justice and corrections, we spend money on human resource needs, mental health, and so on, and more than half the budget we spend on education. And within the education realm, we have to decide how much to spend on early childhood programs for children from birth to age 5, how much to spend on K-12 education, how much to spend on various kinds of remedial programs, how much to spend on community colleges and universities, and so on. I don't want to cut any of those things. Those things are all critical. I've been a father, grandfather, and a teacher, and a professor, and I understand the importance of education. Please, go out there and talk to your legislators and tell them this state needs additional revenue if we're going to reach the goals that we need to reach in terms of education funding.
Thank you, Senator Monroe. Any other colleagues? I would like to give the opportunity, Mr. Barta, I know you had signed up for public testimony yesterday and we were not able to. I'd be happy to give you 3 minutes now. And you will have gained a minute by waiting from yesterday to today.
Could we vote on that?
Yeah. But you will be hearing a timer go off at the end of that 3 minutes, so you'll know.
Well, he was going to testify yesterday. He only gets 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm on the two-minute clock.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is James Barta. I'm the legislative director for Children First for Oregon, and I had prepared this testimony for the early childhood segment of the public testimony. So I just wanted to quickly review as Co-Chair Monroe described many of the early childhood programs, the EIECSE, home visiting, healthy families, which the largest which is Healthy Families Oregon, preschool promise relief nurseries, culturally diverse education fund, child care subsidies, of course, with ERDC. All these programs work together for the early childhood population. And you heard today, I'm sure, many stories, and yesterday, you heard many stories about the importance of these programs and how the hubs help them work together so they can find the right programs for the right people. Now, it's important that these children have the best services, you know, stable services, stable homes, stable schools, all these things. And so I'm hoping that these programs can continue to work together, because sometimes children need multiple programs. You know, sometimes they need just one, and it's a matter of finding the best program for them, too, both the children and the parents. And so, you know, every story of success that you heard yesterday, in particular, there's unfortunately 3, 4, sometimes 5 children that have that same need that aren't getting the services because of our budget situation. And that's, you know, it's important to remember those successes, but it's also important to remember all these children that aren't getting these services at the same time. And so, you know, in addition, you know, we've got a working population that doesn't get a lot of funding. This is a very low paid service that mostly women do, and a lot of immigrant women do. And unfortunately, it's something that we hope, you know, may not be solved this session, but in future sessions it will be solved. And so, you know, the example I like to point out is Head Start teachers. Of course, they have a lot of turnover because their median salary is half that of kindergarten teachers. And, you know, you can't keep good people at these low salaries. So I just want to end up with, you know, this is our next generation of Oregonians. We're either going to, these people are either going to help us in our old age, or we're going to pay for their public safety services. So this budget is unsustainable, and I hope we can work together to fix that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Without further ado or motion from the audience, I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5516 and Senate Bill 5517. And colleagues, on Monday, we will be back in our regular meeting room for what could be the last day of the ODE presentation. I will see you all then, and I would like to adjourn today's meeting. It could be.